Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Get in on all the sports action and your chance to win up to 100 times your cash with Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio. It's Rog. It's Friday. And it's a little something different from Men in Blazers World Headquarters today because it's July 1st. And we know what you're thinking. July 1st? What? It's the 106th anniversary of the Battle of the Somme. And you are correct. The truth is, the First World War is not taught in America the same way the stories of these men were beaten into us in England. Tales from the trenches at the Somme, Ypres, Passchendaele, they have lived inside generations of Britons. The sheer horror of what these soldiers endured has stayed with us since we first encountered them in school. And if you've listened to Men in Blazers for any period of time, you know that the literature, the poetry, the storytelling from this era has been incredibly formative in my life, in my education. And one tale that's always fascinated me is that of the Football Battalion, a British unit who kicked off the Battle of the Somme by punting footballs out of their trench before chasing them and charging into a hail of German machine gun fire in the process. Just the incongruence of the joyful act of kicking a football, the one thing that tethers a human being to their youth, to their innocence, before being sent to an almost certain death on that blood-stained canvas in the middle of France, is truly haunting. And so what you're about to hear is that unique story told in a unique way. It comes from producer J-Dubs, Jonathan Williamson, who created an audio play that is essentially the fictitious oral history of four football-loving friends from that unit, the 8th East Surreys. Very much a work of fiction that J-Dubs created these characters. But the overarching story, the details of the unit are quite fanatically researched via a combination of books, podcasts, hours of Zooms with a lovely gent named Ian Chatfield, who was the curator and manager of the Surrey Infantry Museum. And so the result of this pandemic fever dream, if you will, is the following audio feature, The Football Battalion, presented by Men in Blazers. Courage.
Before the four of us left for France, we didn't measure time in hours and minutes. It was wins and losses, goals for and against. It's all that mattered.
Losing a football match felt like a Greek tragedy. When we lost, I couldn't sleep at night.
We played anywhere we could get a game. 15 aside in the park, 2v2 in the street. We used our captors' goalposts. Play all day and into the night, till the lamps went out in the city centre.
And then the lamps went out all over Europe.
We still played in France. Games were always on when we were back from the line.
It's tough to kick a football in a trench.
Even more difficult in no man's land, with Germans firing machine guns at you.
We found that out the hard way.
And we all signed up together. August 1914, first month of the war.
Britain's war secretary, Lord Horatio Kitchener, said he wanted 100,000 men.
And his poster was everywhere. This massive image of Kitchener looking right at you, his eyes staring into your soul. His finger thrust itself forward and practically poked you in the chest. And he had this amazing great big moustache. At that point, The four of us basically had pencil shavings on our upper lip. And we wouldn't put razor to cheek for fear it wouldn't grow back. Kitchens, though. It felt like a symbol for all of Britain, you know? The honour of England, who we are as a people, what we stand for.
Motivated by a moustache? He actually said that. Adrian is so full of shite.
What can I say? I'm a romantic.
It had nothing to do with facial hair, not even Britain. My dad's Irish, for fuck's sake. Forgive me if I didn't feel compelled to lay down my life for His Majesty. Anyone who read the Times of London knew what the Hun was doing to those civilians.
Yeah. Yeah, that too.
The rape of Belgium. First the Boche invade, a neutral country. One that wanted no part in this mess. And the Belgians have the audacity to greet them with fire instead of flowers. And that upset those Hun bastards. So they brutally slaughtered 674 innocent men, women and children in Dinan. They burned Leuven, an entire city. You know the church and library they torched was built 500 years ago? 500 years. These people have no respect. You can't have them rule all of Europe. That's what would have happened if France fell.
I only went because they were going. Adrian's my little brother. Let him and one of our best friends travel off to war together, have some great adventure, and come home and rub it in my face till we're old. No bloody way.
Well, three of us tried to convince Simon too.
I had just signed to Crystal Palace the previous year. I was 17 when the war broke out, close to cracking the first team. The one thing the four of us dreamed of our entire lives. It wasn't that I didn't want to serve, but I wanted to do it on the football field, in a European Cup final, not some blood-stained mud canvas in France.
The truth is, there wasn't anyone around to look after his mum.
Simon was the best player of the four of us, unquestionably.
Technically better, maybe. But you can't coach heart.
Everywhere Simon went, he had a football at his feet.
That's why he was so shit with girls. If you're 16 or 17, you can't chat anyone up with a football at your feet. We all love playing, but you have to draw the line somewhere.
I swear, Simon's football saw more of London than any cab driver ever has. And no, it probably didn't help him with girls. But it is why, when Simon played, it looked like he had the ball on a string. When he ran at full pace, well, more of a gallop, really, the ball looked like an appendage, a phantom limb. You couldn't get it off of him. By the time we were about 8 years old, I learned it was better just to back off and try and make him pass. Otherwise, he'd just embarrass you.
The football field. That's where Si silenced the noise of the outside world. Where he sought refuge. The only place he felt comfortable. So, sort of ironic. That's where it happened to him.
He got white feathered.
What's that mean? It means you go to France, or you never get laid again.
In those early days of the war, a group of women went around England in search of men who looked old enough to be in uniform. If you weren't wearing one, they would march right up to you and pin a white feather on you.
A sign of cowardice. The ultimate insult, the kiss of death.
Goes back to cockfighting, actually. Crossbreeds were considered inferior. And how do you tell a crossbreed? White feather. Those other smart asses probably didn't know that, did they?
They'd also tear into you verbally while pinning you. They were savages. Call you every name under the sun.
Things we wouldn't even say to each other.
Should have sent them over to fight. Can't imagine what the White Feather Brigade would have done to the Germans.
Simon got it bad. Right on Clapham Common. In front of everyone.
We weren't there, we were saying our goodbyes. But Adrian and I have a 14-year-old brother, Dominic. He was there, that's how we heard.
Now Simon was playing the football game with Dominic's friends, you know, younger kids. I mean, he knew he was better than them. but it really wasn't about competition. It was touches. Touches, touches, touches. No matter where, no matter when, no matter against whom.
Simon had the ball out on the wing. He had this thing where he'd keep it out on the right and then cut inside onto his left to shoot. You knew it was coming, but you couldn't stop it. Trust me, I tried everything. And so Sire's got some poor kid on his right side, ready to do him. All of a sudden, this woman rushes onto the field, screaming.
You!
And the game just stops. And Sire's looking over, confused, like, why is this woman so upset? Then it becomes clear he's her target. She is tearing him limb from limb.
You're a disgrace to Britain.
And now the crowd is getting bigger and bigger.
A coward.
And people start to recognise Sire because he's this upcoming football star. And a few of them even joined in, telling him what a piece of shit he is. And then she said it.
Your father must be ashamed.
The reality is, she didn't even know him, or his family situation.
He just stood there and took it.
That's all you can do, really.
After about 10 minutes, she walked off, leaving him with a single white feather on his lapel.
That must have weighed 2 tons.
That night, he said goodbye to his mom. We waited outside for him. We could hear her crying. I've heard grown men cry out after being blown apart by a German grenade. I would take that any day over the sounds his mum made. Anguish, I wouldn't wish on anyone.
Was he crying? I really don't see how that's relevant at all.
Anyway, that's the four of us. Off to France to fight the Hun.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham Fortress, known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, some for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites, in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke espresso blend. Have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Welcome to the British Expeditionary Force, the finest thing anyone's ever belonged to.
Those were his first words to us.
And that's Billy, our captain, the man who led 8th Surrey's B Company.
The finest thing anyone's ever belonged to.
We were all trained. Hell, we'd marched around East Anglia for the better part of a year before we even left England. But when you arrived in France, and they send you to the front for the first time, you realise how ill-equipped you are for what's coming.
Well, the worst part was the rats. size of small dogs, some of these things. Fucking enormous. Well, we had this one girl in our company, Tom.
I thought it was Tim.
His real name was Tom, but, you know, everyone called him Tim. Just one of those things, really. Someone misheard it once, everyone picks up on it, and after a while, Tom or Tim, you just stop correcting people. Anyway, where was I? So, yeah. A rat gnawed through this guy's pant leg while he was asleep. Now, he wakes up while it's making its way towards his, you know. Now, Tom, or Tim, he so freaks out that he pulls out a revolver he'd taken off this dead German and he fires it into his own pants.
I was right next to him when it happened. This son of a bitch actually hit the rat. Also hit his own leg, but the rat took the worst of it. The wound was just a blighty. God sent back to England, lucky bastard.
Oof, rats. They were worse than the Germans.
The rats were bad, but not as bad as the smell. It was like a terrible housemate. Perpetually there. Impossible to shake. It declared squatter's rights in your nostrils. Living at the back of your throat, tugging on your gag reflex. Imagine the bottom of an unemptied latrine. Now dunk your head into that. And multiply it 100-fold. Some guys got used to it. I never could.
It was the bodies that caused the smell.
The corpses that littered no man's land. When the wind blew out of the northeast, we get wafts of the fate that awaited us. God taunting us.
That was just the human corpses. The stench of fallen comrades haunts you, yeah, but if we're talking pure stink, the horses were much worse. They were too heavy to clear, so both sides, us and the Germans, we just left them there. Took ages to decompose.
Billy knew how much the smell bothered me. He would sneak me double rations of tobacco. That way, I could try and keep a smoke going and not have to smell it.
Worst part of life in the trenches? Well, it was all the worst part. The gas attacks. Racing to put on your gas mask before that slow, rolling cloud makes its way across no man's land, constricting your lungs, burning your eyes. The shelling. Constant, unrelenting. Coal boxes, heavies, whiz-bangs, all of them. Raining a storm of steel down on our trench. Talking of trenches, the digging. My God, the digging. Well, it was backbreaking. It took 450 men, 6 hours, to dig 250 yards of trench. Try doing that knowing it will likely double as your grave.
Flu. Typhoid. Trench foot. All those passed. The disease for which there's no cure. Homesickness. I missed England. Those evenings back home when we'd play football in the summer. During the game, you'd stop just for that brief moment, and the sun would set the London sky on fire.
In France, the sky really was on fire. Exploding shells.
I miss my mum too, and I know she missed me. She isn't the best at reading and writing, but she must have practiced hard because she sent me letters in France. That's the only thing that got me through those early days.
Besides letters. Don't think we need to talk about that.
I'm not comfortable addressing that.
You're asking me if she actually wrote those letters?
I'll just say this. Sai's mum is a lovely woman, but she's had a tough life.
The first time we got mail over there, I had a package from Fortnum and Mason's. Gloves. His Majesty, in his infinite wisdom, only issued us one pair a year. So this was a windfall. My dad must not eat for a week to save up for those.
Now, John and I got 6 letters apiece. You see, Mum and Dad made each one of our brothers and sisters write us.
Yeah, we knew they would have hated it. Like extra homework.
Simon didn't get anything.
He only had his mum. And she can't read or write.
And we've known this kid since we're 4 years old. We can tell when he's upset.
Billy picked up on it too. When he passed out the mail, something was wrong with Si.
Billy pulled me to the side, asked why Si didn't get any mail. I told him he was an only child, his mum didn't write very well. And I told him about his dad.
The next day, John and I wrote back to our family and said, we only need one letter each. We told mum and dad to have some of the younger ones write to Si. I mean, he was always around the house for tea when his mum was working, so he was like part of the family.
The next time Billy handed out the mail, Simon had two letters from our brothers, Michael and Liam. We knew those were coming. But then, Billy hands Simon a third letter from his mum.
We couldn't believe it.
Not only did her writing improve, but she must have started to follow the football, because the letter was mostly just an update on the matches. Really not too much about her or what was happening in London. Only a few pleasantries, but it made a massive difference.
The way Billy stood there and watched while he read it.
What was funny like that? You're up in the trenches, surrounded by all this slaughter. And occasionally, just for a brief moment, poetic beauty would just peek its head above the parapet. They were quite transcendent, to be honest. You almost forgot you were at war.
Yeah, well, you didn't forget for long.
Night patrols.
A death sentence.
The worst.
Pitch black. Going into no man's land at night. The devil's playground. 60 yards from the Hun, depending on where you were in the trench line. Most of the time, it was something simple, like fixing a bit of barbed wire that had been ripped apart by German artillery.
Think about that for a second. We used artillery, some of the deadliest weaponry ever invented, to destroy barbed wire. The same stuff that a farmer uses to keep cows from wandering off.
If Billy was the officer in charge, he always picked Simon. Now, Billy wanted the best with him. Someone who would actually do the job. You know, not just crawl out there, lay in no man's land and come back with some old bollocks.
Meaning, someone else would have to go out the next night and get it done properly.
And because Billy wanted to get the best out of Si, he also always chose the three of us.
Certain missions, you just had a sense something was off from the start.
I know the night he's talking about. I couldn't find my lucky bootlaces. Not trench boots. Football boots. Before we left, I was unstoppable when I laced these up. I could almost keep up with Simon. Did he say I couldn't keep up? He actually said that. Whatever. That's not the point. In the trench, I kept them tied around my wrist.
When you're on the line, you cling to this idea of luck. You know, shell fragments chance ricochet. One step to your right or left, peeking your head over in the wrong spot. And those moments, those are the differences between dinner that night and death. So yeah, he needed those laces. We needed those laces. So we thought, oh god, this is just another mission to repair the wire in front of a trench. Or maybe a listening party, you know, crawling near the German trench and eavesdropping to see if we could get any intel. And honestly, both of those would have been bad enough. And then Billy told us what the assignment really was.
I don't even think he believed it.
To hang a fucking bell on the enemy wire.
The Germans had done that to us a couple of places down the line, and High Command thought it was highly effective.
What they would do is tie a bell on the barbed wire, usually near a machine gunner, and then leave a string on it and bring the string back into their own trench. That way, they could ring the bell in the middle of the night. When you do, the machine gunner thinks someone's crawling through the wire and lets off a few rounds. but there's no one there.
3 nights of shooting at shadows, and any machine gunner has not only wasted a ton of ammo, they're mentally destroyed.
Amusing. Yeah, maybe. But is it worth risking the lives of able-bodied men? No way.
Especially not without my laces.
And Billy's standing there and explaining it to us, straight-faced. It's just the five of us. Because, yeah, how many guys does it take to tie a bell on the wire? And Billy, he's the only one who's armed because he has a Webby 38. You see, it's easy to crawl and carry a revolver at the same time, but an enlisted man's rifle, not a chance.
So, we get the briefing, and we're sitting there, just waiting for it to get dark.
You want a sunset to break your heart? Try watching it, knowing it could be your last.
When the moon didn't do us any bloody favours. Its light just blanketed no man's land.
Then you take into account the flares the Germans sent up. It was easily brighter than a winter's day in Britain.
Most summer days too, to be fair.
And when the sun finally went down, over the top we went.
Those first few yards out, all you're thinking is, am I even going to hear the shot that kills me? You press yourself into the ground, hoping it will swallow a hole. The only time I ever envied the miners.
And of course, the Hun is sending up flare after flare after flare. Wait, hang on, did we already mention the flares?
The first couple of minutes last a few hours. You hold your breath and lie completely still. If you survive that, it's a blessing. And a curse. Because it means you have to carry on.
Those missions awakened something in Si.
It was the closest feeling I've ever had to being on a football pitch. Throw the plan out the minute you're over the top. Or reaction. The senses are heightened. It's like your whole life has been lived underwater. And then you suddenly emerge.
And we're crawling across, hands getting all scratched up by tins, bottles, stones. And Billy is a few yards ahead of us.
He always led from the front.
And he's also got this bloody bell we're supposed to hang on this wire, stuffed into his pocket and wrapped up in old newspapers, you know, so it wouldn't make any noise. If it did, well, it would be a siren song for a German sniper. Or even worse, one of ours who was a bit nervous.
He's crawling quickly.
Too quickly for my liking.
We're about 30 yards in one of the few spots not pockmarked by artillery. It's this lone patch of eye grass, almost halfway between the sets of trenches. And Billy stops cold.
Only two reasons to do that.
One, you're dead.
Two, you think you're about to die.
We follow suit. Stop immediately. I plant my face in the dirt. Basically swallow a chunk of France. And that's when I hear it.
Whispering. In German.
I never liked that language. Too guttural. Always been more of a romance language, man.
A German night patrol is 10 yards away. And plenty of them. 10. Maybe 12. Remember, we're only 5. And Billy is the only one armed.
And there's just nothing we could do at this point but watch Billy. If he gets up, we get up. If he lies still, we lie still. He's conducting this orchestra, and it's like we're just the players.
I see Billy inch left towards him, and he puts his hand to his Webley.
I had an itch right under my eye. I was dying to scratch it.
And Billy, he starts to raise his revolver.
You just lie there, thinking, this is as good a spot as any.
I see Billy's thumb pull back the hammer. Once he sets it, and it clicks, there's no going back. The Germans are certainly going to hear it.
And then they start speaking quickly.
The next few seconds will determine the course of your entire life.
Your body starts to tingle. A sense of hyper-awareness blankets you.
Worst itch I have ever had, I'm telling you.
Now, right as Billy's about to reach the point of no return in his revolver, there's more German. Quick, hurried. It's like they're panicked. These bastards turn around and start crawling back towards their own trench.
We laid there for an hour to make sure it was safe. And then we get on with it. Hung the bell.
Stupidest bloody mission ever.
Billy let me hang it. He even let me pull the string over the next few nights back in our trench. You'd hear the machine gunner opening up for a few seconds. If the wind was down and you listened carefully, you'd hear him get berated for wasting ammunition. I loved it.
We weren't at the front the entire time. We rotate. 10 days up, sometimes less. Then back to the support trench.
After the support trench, you go to the back, which, honestly, yeah, it wasn't so bad. The food was certainly better. Not just bacon and beans, and bacon and bloody beans. We'd actually get the occasional egg. Plus a hot meal and pudding most nights. Plum duff.
The fact we had a roof over our heads helped.
Oh, village hall, farm building, hey, maybe even a French family.
Or French women. Les Françaises, if you know what I mean.
John wasn't getting off with any French women.
How would they know what I was doing?
He was with us every day, playing football.
You see, the officers actually encouraged it because, well, honestly, it kept us lot out of trouble. That was the closest we got to being back home. You know, you throw down two jumpers in this massive field. Let's do it.
You can't chase women if you spend all day kicking a ball about.
What do they know?
Not only that, but it kept us fit. After nearly 2 weeks in a trench, where one step will get you killed, your muscles aren't exactly engaged. So to be able to run about in an open field, you felt like a horse that's been let out of its pen.
Immediately people knew who we were. We got a reputation.
We also had quite the advantage.
My lucky laces.
Not quite. What I meant was, it was more so the fact we've been playing together since we were kids. And it didn't matter who else they stuck on our team. Those other companies didn't stand a chance.
And if people knew us, they definitely knew Cy.
The guy had been signed to Crystal Palace. He was the best footballer in France. Either side of the line.
That also put a target on his back.
And he got the absolute shit kicked out of him. Now, these guys had pent-up rage. I don't know if it was born of missing home, the war, the things they'd seen, maybe all three. And honestly, there was probably some jealousy mixed in there as well. And they just go steaming into him. It got to the point where you worried more about Cy during the football matches in the rear than when we were up in the trenches.
Billy really worried about him. This one time, right in the middle of a game, he pulls me off and says, "You need to look after our boy there." I told him Cy was too quick to be actually hurt. Can't kick what you can't catch. But Billy turns to me and says, "You better hope so. Can I have him injured for what we have coming up?"
And that was the first any of us had heard of it.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Takeoff 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
At this point, we've been in France for more than a year. So we were cynical. Anything that came down from Douglas Haig was always best chased down with a healthy dose of scepticism. But even Billy seemed to buy this.
It's a massive offensive in which we would finally end this war. We'd smash through the trenches, shatter their lines, and allow the cavalry to chase them all the way back to Berlin.
When you hear something like that, it's a torrent of emotions.
It's this cocktail of hope, honour, and terror. The feeling is, it's visceral. It's enough to make you physically sick. And you do your best. You know, you try and boil it all up and you just stuff it back down. And that's when you remind yourself why you signed up in the first place. The honour of England was at stake.
I wasn't thinking about England. Just myself. And my friends. I was so desperate to believe. Just one more push. And if you survive that, that's the war. That's the four of us back in Britain by Christmas. Means be damned. I only thought about the end.
Who can think about the end? Not when you know either you or the man standing next to you, or both of you, won't achieve that end. A fully fledged frontal assault against a German trench system that was more like an impenetrable fortress. But the all-knowing High Command told us that wasn't going to be a problem here.
Total annihilation. Those were his words. Wouldn't be a German army left after our artillery was done with them. We'd stroll through the trenches as we pleased, taking whatever German food, wine and ammo we wanted.
If all the Germans were dead, why would we need the ammo?
It's a lot of killing to end all of the killing, you see. Generals may be willing to sacrifice human life, but certainly not irony.
Adrian and I were in the support trench smoking a cigarette when it started. We dropped to the floor. Felt a little foolish when we realised it was our guns that were doing it. We just never heard anything like this before.
June 24. A heaping helping of hate.
18 pounders mostly. Some 4.5 howitzers in there too.
It felt like the fury of the entire empire was behind this barrage. I mean, it was bad enough just hearing it. I cannot even begin to imagine what it must have been like to be on the receiving end.
We even started to believe all the talk of waltzing into those German trenches. How could we not? The shitstorm we sent their way. Nothing like it in the history of human conflict.
And everyone sat there saying, well, maybe they are dead. I mean, they're not shooting.
Of course they're not shooting. They're all sitting in their dugouts. Cozy little bedrooms they'd made for themselves in the trenches. Say what you want about the Germans, but there's some great engineers in that country. They may not have slept in a week, but I was never convinced they weren't there.
June 30, 5 days after the barrage started. And Billy calls us all together in the support trench.
That's when we knew it was us who was going over.
And he's gathered us all around to give a big speech.
I was looking for my lucky laces, which I'd lost again. So I don't remember exactly what he said.
I never remembered the pep talks. when you know you're the one who's going, you just want to get it over with.
Of course I remember the speech. And I bet I'm not the only one who does.
Gentlemen, we've been presented the opportunity to put an end to nearly 2 years of carnage that has sent the blood of your countrymen, your brothers, cousins, neighbours, Englishmen to the last, seeping into this very soil.
And he's giving this speech, but the whole time he's holding these two footballs.
One under each arm.
We will charge across this mile of land, take the first trench, then the second, then the third.
And they had writing on them as well, each of these footballs, you know, big block letters that were easy to read, even if you weren't right next to him.
One said, "The Great European Cup Final. East Surreys versus the Bavarians. Kickoff at zero."
And the other one said, in these big block letters, "No referee."
That was a philosophy I could get behind.
When you encounter the enemy, what is left of them, act swiftly, decisively, and without hesitation. For remember, it is they who wanted this fight, and we have been afforded the opportunity to stop the bleeding of an entire generation.
And while he's doing this, and he's spelling out our mission, he starts walking over to one of the Welshmen.
Jones or Davies, I don't know, he was Welsh, so it was one or the other.
"I've here two footballs, and I would like a pair of very special soldiers to kick off this charge. One that will alter the course of human history, and I will offer a reward of £20 sterling to whomever has them when we reach our objective of Montaubon Ridge. I would like to present the first to Richard Jones."
Told you it was Jones.
And now it's starting to really sink in what's at stake here.
A chance to go back to playing on the village green. No more rats. No more stink. No more watching your friends die.
So he's given Jones one ball, and then he starts walking our way.
Everyone knew where that second ball was going.
I'm thinking I'm definitely getting the other ball.
"And I present the second ball to Simon Stockwell."
I will never forget the look of pride on his face.
"I once saw this kid get the ball deep in his own half, dribble the entire Woolwich Arsenal youth team and score the winner in an FA Youth Cup final. He didn't look half as proud as he did in that moment."
Like he forgot we were on our way to charge through a hail of German machine gun fire.
He wasn't able to forget that long.
"Gentlemen, at 07:30, when the guns stop, we go."
The whistle goes, and I just remember looking right at Si.
He put that right foot through the ball, like we'd seen him do so many times before.
And over the top we went.
When you first go over, there's this strange realization that the sheer act of leaving the trench isn't actually what's going to kill you. The ground isn't made of molten lava. It's what can happen to you once you're over that's going to do it.
We're only a few steps in, and one of those German machine guns just puckers up and starts spitting.
It was immediately clear that our artillery hadn't done the damage everyone thought. Just as I suspected.
The four of us stayed close. Lined up, left to right. All advancing at the same time. I was furthest left. The man in front of me was hit. Then the man in front of him. But you can't stop. You mustn't stop. That's what they tell you. When death has you surrounded, keep moving. At all costs.
Billy is leading this whole thing from the front. And after a few of hours fall, we're all right behind him.
He's got his pistol in his right hand, and he waves us forward. He says,
"If I'm the one at Montauban Ridge with those balls, I'm keeping my money."
In the middle of all this carnage, the cheek, the balls. But, you know, that was pure Billy.
We're getting close to the German barbed wire protecting their first trench, and it's completely intact. That's the problem with British artillery, shrapnel-based. Won't do a job on the wire.
I watched two more men die in front of me. Just had to step over them. All that's going through your head is, you mustn't stop.
Then, we all stopped.
It happened right in front of us.
Billy had just given Simon's ball a whack towards the German trench. And right as he approaches the barbed wire, he pulls a Mills bomb.
He tugs it off his belt, pulls the pin, and just as he's about to chuck it into the German trench, he crumbles.
When someone gets shot, you always imagine that their body flies backwards. It doesn't really happen like that.
They deflate, like someone's let the air out of them.
It was immediately clear.
You mustn't stop. Never. If you remember one thing, remember that. Like a being, that one order will keep you alive.
5 hours later, I reached Montauban Alley, and I was the first one, you see. Not the first of all B Company, but, the first of the four of us.
I intentionally stayed just a few paces behind him. Well, he's my little brother, so I wasn't going to leave him behind. So technically, I was second, but I could have been first if I really wanted to.
For the longest time, it's just the two of us, and we are digging and digging and digging for a possible counterattack.
The whole time wondering what happened to the other two.
I never made it. I was up front, next to Adrian, when we took the second German trench. By this time, it was hand-to-hand fighting. You live on instinct. I stepped on an unexploded potato masher. One of those phallic-looking German grenades. Took my right foot clean off. Put a tourniquet on my leg to stop the bleeding. With what? My lucky laces. I was sent back from the front to an aid station, and then back to Britain. Probably the best thing that could have happened. Not even those who made it to Montauban were as lucky as me.
Simon comes up a few minutes after me and John, and the first question he asks is,
"Where's Billy?"
I remember thinking, "Didn't you see what we all just saw?"
And he just refused to believe it. Even when the rest of us were discussing it, Si just kept turning around like he expected to see Billy walk up behind us and, you know, pat him on the shoulder. But he had no choice when we received the casualty briefing. Billy was buried the next day in Carnoy. And we couldn't even attend the funeral. The whole area was under artillery fire. And they didn't want to risk us.
You can't have the men killed right before you need to send them to their death.
Eric was home, lucky bastard. But the three of us, we stayed and kicked on. What choice did we have?
Things were different after that. But also the same. 8 Surrey's B Company. We'd reached our objective that day, but so many units didn't. The Somme was more of the same. A meat grinder of human life. The trenches continued to bleed.
It's one thing that did change. We just stopped playing football when we were back. Didn't have the heart for it. Sort of just went through the motions. And one day, the war just ends. And that's it. 3 years of anticipating death, and all of a sudden, you've made it. You're not dead.
Or you are.
I was there when they got off the train,
There he is, cheeky fuck, one leg. And he's carrying size old football. Like we're going to have a game.
I went round his mum's to get it. When she saw the state of me, she couldn't do anything but cry. I stayed for a cup of tea, but she just cried.
It's needless to say, Si didn't receive any letters from his mum after Billy died. In fact, he stopped speaking altogether. Even to me and John.
Not that that stopped him from volunteering for all those bloody night missions.
So I go through all this trouble to get Si's football from his mum. I take it to the train station, one leg and all. And after all that, it wasn't even me who wasn't willing to give it a go.
Eric, he just didn't know.
Well, it wasn't his fault. You know, it was a nice gesture.
The last football I'll ever kick was out of that trench.
I left my leg over there. But some people left something far greater.
Matthew Ball as Adrian.
Winter Fonander as Eric.
Kieran Cresswell as John.
Morgan Archer as Simon.
Music by Robert McDonald.
Additional music by Jeff Ray.
Artwork by Kiara Seward.
Written, produced, directed, edited, and mixed by Jonathan Williamson. With special thanks to The Gotham, Gigi Hawkins, and Lexi Tannenholtz.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
If you travel, you know when it comes to love.
See you soon.
Can't wait.
The sky is no limit. You know with your Delta Amex card, being oceans apart means meeting in Aruba. And booking a war travel with your card means saving 15% on Delta flights. You know kissing under the bridge of sighs guarantees eternal love. Because you're the long-distance lovebirds. It's why you're a Delta SkyMiles Platinum American Express card member. If you travel, you know. Take off 15 discount not applicable to partner-operated flights or taxes and fees. Terms apply. Visit go.amex/you know.